This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 30th of June 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And an especially warm welcome to Hilary Parsons.
Hello.
Who's reading for us for the first time today. And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click on Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. You can also hear for the first time now Winchester Talking Newspaper on the radio, on the Awaz Community Radio, and it'll be every Sunday at midday. Awaz Radio is on the DAB channel. You just retune your DAB radio and search for Awaz. That is spelt AWAAZ. And you can listen to us also reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. We start with our usual headline stories. Council backing for Bushfield plan. MP Brines set to stand down. New NHS hub one step closer. And dogs left to die in crates at home. So, Heather, could we have our first story, please?
Yes, of course. Civic chiefs have agreed to support a master plan for the redevelopment of a former army base on the edge of Winchester. The Bushfield Camp scheme has been widely scrutinised by local residents and councillors. The master plan was supported by Winchester City Council's Cabinet last Wednesday, June 21st. Developers envisage a business park on the previously built-up land, as well as potential hotel, student accommodation, shops, cafe, sports facilities, and the conservation of the adjacent chalk downland. One of the main causes for concern was the potential impact on traffic surrounding the site. City Councillor Brian Lamming, who represents the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, said, taking into account the 2,500 to 3,500 employees, the 2,500 to 3,500 employees expected on site, this will increase the number of vehicles to a level that the road system is incapable of handling. Any strain on Badger Farm and Romsey Road is dangerous, causing problems for emergency services to negotiate the road. They already have problems. Think of a fully laden fire engine trying to get through the traffic. These are often life and death situations where every second counts. Councillor Jan Warwick from the same ward said, the potential employment opportunities presented by Bushfield Camp are commendable. However, we cannot overlook the concerns raised by residents regarding their local site. Unused for 50 years, and is a beautiful open space with its own natural biodiversity. I hope we can work together to find a solution. Badger Farm Parish Council Chairman John Godbold said, The main concern we have is over traffic and road access. We don't object to the development itself. A lot of residents agree with the development, but question the suitability of the site. Siobhan Osborne from Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Residents Community Association spoke in objection. She said, "I'm dismayed at the proposal. It's overdevelopment. There has been a lack of transparency throughout the process." The developers told the meeting that work was still ongoing and that the concerns raised would be dealt with in the outline planning application. After scrutinising the report and the master plan, City Councillor Martin Todd said, "I understand the concerns, but we don't have a final resolution at this stage. We need to think about how we can offer the range of jobs our residents need." The Cabinet agreed to support the master plan. The next stage will see an outline planning application in September.
Thank you. Heather Richard, please.
MP Brine set to stand down. Steve Brine has announced that he will leave the House of Commons at the next general election. The MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford and Chairman of the Commons Health and Social Care Committee, who was first elected in 2010, said it was time to consider a new chapter in his life. At the last election, his majority was 985, down from the 9,999 at the previous election. In a letter to the chairman of Winchester Conservative Association, Matthew Pellerow, he said, "When I first entered Parliament, I had in my mind to serve for 20 years, or for four general elections, whichever came first. This wasn't a hard and fast rule, and I don't think anyone could have predicted the events of the past 13 years, but it feels like the right time now, for both myself and the family. Going forward, I feel I can pursue some of the issues I care about, in health and perhaps elsewhere, outside Parliament as well as within. During my time as our MP, Susie and I have had two wonderful children, and I've put my heart and soul into doing the job. My team and I have done tens of thousands of pieces of casework to date, and that quietly remains the bedrock of my work for the people I represent. I hope in time to be around a little more, both for them, but also for Susie, who has supported me every step of the way, and without whom I could never have done any of this." Mr. Brine, 49, spoke of his friendship with Chancellor Jeremy Hunt and said of Rishi Sunak, "Our Prime Minister is not only a local boy, but is a good friend. The UK has a world-class leader in Rishi Sunak, who is a thoroughly decent person, perfectly suited to the job. He will always have my total support, and I hope people will recognise that before it is too late and before they vote in a way that lets in a Labour government." Danny Chambers, Lib Dem candidate, said, "I wish Steve Brine all the best for the future after many years in Parliament. We may not agree on everything, but we've always enjoyed a polite relationship, and that's how politics should be conducted. Winchester has become a marginal and was held by the Lib Dems between 1997 and 2010. It'll be sought after by many Conservative candidates. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond might also be in the running. She will see her constituency disappear at the next election."
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, your piece, please.
New NHS hub, one step closer. The business plan for a new surgery hub in Hampshire has been approved by the NHS. The new hub, which will be based in Royal County Hospital Winchester, will provide a higher capacity and allow more operations to take place. This will improve access to elective surgery for people across the county and reduce the local backlog. Operations at the hub will be in addition to surgery already taking place at NHS hospitals across the county, with patients in Southampton and Central Hampshire to be offered the choice of having their operation at either their local hospital or the hub. The hub will deliver 2,400 procedures a year, operating 6 days a week, with consultants from both University Hospital Southampton and Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust. Julie Maskery, Strategic Projects Director at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We are delighted that NHS England has approved the business case and the funding for this exciting collaborative project, which will benefit many people across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The elective hub will provide a new way of working for orthopaedic surgery, and approval from NHS England is a significant milestone in the delivery of this new and exciting programme. Planning for the hub is already underway, with the programme collaborating with the contractor Integrated Health Projects, IHP, and AD Architects to develop the building specification. The plans involve refurbishing a floor within the Burrell Building in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to create two theatres and the associated inpatient facilities. At the same time as developing the plans for the new elective hub, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust is also developing proposals to build a new outpatient facility specifically for orthopaedics." Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "This is further significant investment in Winchester Hospital, and it's very welcome. I will go on and on doggedly making the case for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital with ministers and the NHS. The hub is scheduled to open in early 2025, with final sign-off on the programme expected in October. The Trust is currently in the process of engaging further with staff, patients and members of the public on the construction and design of the new building. To offer feedback and find out more, visit forms.office.com/e/ryi2xtin7a.
Hillary, yes, I'm sure you have memorised that particular website address.
Well, maybe they will go back.
Right, here's a warning about the next piece. For those who love our pets, this is distressing. Dogs left to die in crates at home. Skeletal remains of four dogs were found in crates at a Hampshire house after their cruel owner left them without food or water. Alexander Thomas Wilson, 32, had been banned from keeping animals for life for causing unnecessary suffering to animals. Wilson of Cranbourne Drive, Otterbourne, admitted two animal welfare charges and narrowly avoided a prison sentence. He received a 16-week sentence suspended for 18 months, as well as a community order to do 300 hours of unpaid work. Wilson pleaded guilty to the offence by failing to adequately investigate or address signs of ill health in four Presser Canario type dogs named Bonnie, Bully, Nala and Cleo. The signs were loss of appetite, weight loss, excessive thirst, magistrates were told. He also admitted failing to keep Nari and Cleo in a suitable living environment. Wilson had initially denied the charges in March in a prosecution brought by the NSPCA, the court heard. The animal welfare charity had been contacted after the bodies were discovered. Inside the conservatory was a dog crate containing the skeletal remains of a dog named Bonnie. She was partially concealed with a dog bed and appeared to have been half wrapped in a black bin bag. There were no bowls inside the crate. Within one of the makeshift dog enclosures were the skeletal remains of another dog, Bully, who was found inside the pen with a deep layer of wood shavings but no bowls. Within another enclosure were the skeletal remains of two more dogs, Nala and Cleo. The enclosure contained an empty bowl and lots of feces. The side of the enclosure was damaged and appeared to have been chewed. Rat burrows were also observed within the enclosure. Southampton Magistrates Court heard that Wilson had decided to breed dogs, which resulted in a large litter of 14 puppies, but found himself in a position where he was not able to rehome dogs as quickly as he would have liked during lockdown. He later took on another dog, which bred with another of his dogs, resulting in another litter of 10 dogs. Wilson was said to have found himself in a situation where he was unable to cope and did not seek help. He claimed the four dogs found dead inside the empty property were off their food and drinking more water than normal in the 2 days prior to their deaths, as well as stating that he always provided the dogs with food and water. A vet who examined the evidence said that the findings were not consistent with the dogs having been provided with water at the time of death. They also said it would not be expected that dogs would be visibly losing weight after just 2 days off their food. The report also highlighted how Naria and Clea were found dead within an environment containing a large number of feces deposits, indicating the dogs were exposed to an unhygienic environment before and at the time of death. The vet said that the single empty stainless steel bowl found within the pen suggests they did not have access to drinking water. RSPCA Inspector Patrick Bailey said after the hearing, "Pets are completely reliant on their owners to ensure their needs are met and they are kept safe and healthy. Owning an animal is a privilege, and ensuring appropriate care is a key part of the responsibility we have towards our pets. It's so sad that in this instance, that responsibility was not met." Alongside the disqualification, suspended prison sentence and unpaid work, Wilson was ordered to pay a £128 victim surcharge. The lifetime ban on keeping animals will be suspended for 28 days to allow for any rehoming of animals. The prosecution costs of £17,570.08 will be paid from central funds. Well, after that upsetting piece, we go on, I'm afraid, to the death notices. Starting, please, with Heather.
Auld. Gerald Stewart Auld. Died 2nd of June, aged 54 years.
Bill Cliff. David John Bill Cliff. Peacefully on the 15th of June, aged 76.
Chandler. Alan Chandler, peacefully on the 15th of June, aged 100.
Cresswell, Corinne Kathleen Mary Cresswell, BEM, formerly of Brackenleigh Care Home Shawford and previously of Lawn Street, Winchester, died peacefully on the 18th of May.
Duffy, Audrey Lavinia Duffy, peacefully at home, 14th of June, aged 98.
Fleury, Bruce Alexander Fleury, a veteran who served with the Royal Hampshire Regiment, the Devon and Cornwall Regiment, and the Princess Royal Regiment.
Martin, Lorraine Martin, died peacefully after a short illness at Abbott Spartan Care Home, aged 89.
Short, Malcolm Short, died on the 9th of June. Now we now move on to Christian comment read this week by Heather, please.
The Christian comment, "Whose Responsibility?" Written by Rosemary A. Baker. I have not preached in church regularly since before COVID, but I have been asked to write some services, and this is printed and delivered or emailed to people who cannot attend church. This has given me some freedom to branch out from the lectionary, which is a 3-year cycle of readings, a guide for ministers and preachers to follow if they wish, and it is their church's routine to do so. This last Sunday, I wrote such a service and discovered that the Methodist Church, and doubtless many others, it is designated as Refugee Sunday, coming, as it does, at the end of the Refugee Week. So I rashly thought I would take this as my theme, as I had never taken a service on it before. June 20th was World Refugee Day, and this is a secular designation, not necessarily a religious one. My own experience of refugees is very limited. Obviously, I did come across people in this category in my work as a psychiatrist and throughout my medical career, both as patients and sometimes as doctors. However, I also remembered that in my last year at primary school, we had a young girl who was a refugee from East Berlin to live with us for the summer. On leaving the army, father had a job as an engineer, working for the Wessex Regional Health Authority in Winchester, and had joined the Winchester Round Table, who had organised a party of refugees to come to Winchester and the surrounding area. I think my parents had thought it would be good for my brother and me to learn about someone who was so much worse off than us and teach us about sharing. It was certainly an experience. I can still see my brother's face as we saw her strip washing and lathering her whole body with soap when she thought she would get into trouble for using too much soap. I'm not sure how much we benefited from this experience, but I certainly learnt what wonderful, kind and caring parents we had. The news currently is full of asylum seekers, refugees, migrants and the problems they pose. There is an overlap with the homelessness, and again, many of these people have mental illness. Sadly, many of these latter groups are also ex-service personnel. Many people have responded in offering help, especially to people and families who have left their homes because of the war in Ukraine. Also in the news this week, we have heard the plans of our new Prince of Wales, who is seeking to bring organisations together and work to end homelessness. The press have tried to find people who think he shouldn't interfere in politics, and what does he know about it, having so many palaces and homes to live in? I'm pleased to say that most people think favourably of his efforts and are pleased the subject is getting a higher profile and somebody is doing something about it. The Old Testament has much to say about how we should treat strangers, sojourners and other vulnerable people. These problems are not just the responsibility of religious people, they belong to us all. During the pandemic, most of the homeless were found places to stay. Was it so very costly?
Right, thank you, Heather. Now we move on to letters to the editor, starting with Richard, please.
Yes, thank you. And this comes from Simon Lever of Badger Farm and is entitled Opposition to M3. Not a new subject. The South Downs National Park Authority is rightly concerned regarding the massive and potential invasive M3 Junction 9 revamp, costing an estimated £190 to £220 million. That's chronicled June 22nd. Our national parks are treasured natural areas and can never be replaced should construction of, in this case, the enormous M3 scheme actually move forward as planned. Such a large percentage of natural land will be destroyed, as well as endangering wildlife. Revamping Junction 9 with multiple access will infringe upon our treasured natural landscape. Not only physical intrusion, but traffic noise will damage the serenity and peace of, for example, Winnall Moors, where, although close to the centre of Winchester, provides a tranquil, quiet environment with spectacular views. I cannot be alone in supporting South Downs National Park Authority's determination to address this environmentally damaging scheme. We must never take our beautiful natural areas for granted, not just for the present, but future generations. Simon Lieber, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
A letter, a case of Don't Feed the Birds, sent in by Neil Dewey. I note it may not be the first time that a red kite, a large bird of prey, cruised the skies over Oliver's Battery. I have been waiting for them to work their way south from Berkshire and North Hampshire, where they have bred successfully in the last few years. This might be seen as too successful by many people other than the RSPB and notable bird lovers. They are fabulous birds to watch, but they are now becoming a major nuisance in suburban areas in the counties, particularly as people will feed them raw meat. They can find their own. May I risk opprobrium by encouraging people to look but not feed? Neil Dewey, Brayside Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Thank you, Hilary. My letter to read is written by Chris Blackman and it's headed Quite Insane. what is our city council trying to do to us? The proposals at Station Approach for multiple 4- and 5-storey office blocks is quite insane, chronicled June 15th. The UK was, until recently, what was known as a developed economy based on the service industry, which takes up vast amounts of office space. COVID came along at the same time as greater availability of fast broadband, and many of those service industry workers now work from home for at least part of their week, and there is little growth in this sector. Supply chain security, global politics and Brexit are all in the process of changing the profile of our economy back to a greater proportion of manufacturing and logistics. So our economy will be increasingly in need of factory and warehouse space, not offices. So why build vast capacity which will sit idle? I'm not sure that we want to increase provision for yet more university students either, as the city is already overrun with them, and there are calls for the way universities are funded to change, with more emphasis on vocational training such as the old apprenticeships, so that could reduce numbers in the long term. More redundant, empty buildings. The carbon footprint of building construction is truly massive, and our City Council has declared a climate emergency. So what of this equation don't they understand? We do not need a Station Approach redevelopment. We should be limiting all development to minimal, organic-based, on-demand schemes, not grand vanity projects of speculative build, supported by developers who stand to gain and seem to be able to convince our council to enter into such ventures. The Bushfield site may just be suitable for manufacturing and logistics, but we need a customer calling for it first, before a spade of soil is turned. Unless, of course, the council wants to build some houses. That was written by Chris Blackman, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester. And the next letter from Heather, please.
This letter is from Robert Barnes about Winnall Moors. I read with some concern the report about Nicola Rule's call to open up this neglected area at the meeting of the Winchester Town Forum. Until we moved from Winchester to Southsea last year, we had visited Winnall Moors on many occasions and subsequently joined the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Ms. Rule does not say what she means by opening up, nor is Winnall Moors neglected, as she would know if she had read up past accounts in the Trust's magazines before speaking. Present access is easy, with a car park alongside the Derngate entrance, and another access is across footbridges from the park. Winnall Moors is primarily for the benefit of wildlife, not humans. Half the moor is open to the public. The northern half is closed for specific areas of wildlife conservation. The Trust's first strategic objective is to stand up for wildlife, advocate the importance of reversing biodiversity declines, and promote nature's role in supporting a substantial economy and people's well-being. The second is to demonstrate our mission through managing and restoring habitats, rebuilding biodiversity, and showcasing the role of functioning ecological networks on land at sea. Let these aims continue undisturbed. Winnall Moors is neither a public recreation space nor a theme park. Robert Barnes, Trust Member and Volunteer, Gunners Row, Southsea.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
And this from Councillor Nick Adams-King, Lead Cabinet Member for Universal Services, Hampshire County Council, about fixing potholes. Your readers will be aware of the toll that a winter of exceptionally wet weather, combined with stop-start freezing temperatures, has taken on Hampshire's 5,000 miles of roads, with an exceptionally high number of potholes and road defects as a result. As the Hampshire County Councillor with responsibility for highways, I want to thank everyone for their patience while we've been fixing the potholes, and also highlight the further action we're taking to tackle this key issue. We're already currently fixing up to 1,000 potholes every week and deploying extra resources to repair more road defects across the county. On top of our existing budget, an extra £6 million received from government in March is helping, but we recognise that more still needs to be done if we're to keep up with the number of road issues being reported to us. That's why we've just announced new plans to invest a further £22.5 million over the next 3 years to go even further in delivering stronger roads for Hampshire. As well as significantly increasing the number of road repairs we can deliver, it'll also mean we can refocus activity to fix as many potholes as we can in one location, in one visit, rather than repairing just the most severe defects that triggered the initial report. While this funding will go a long way to help fix our roads in the short term, the fact remains that government still needs to give councils up and down the country enough funding to enable longer term measures to be put in place to keep the road network fit for future demands. It can cost up to 40% more to fix a pothole today than it did back in 2019. Keeping Hampshire's roads moving is a big priority for us, for people's day-to-day lives, the public safety, and to keep the local economy thriving. Thank you to everyone who continues to help us by reporting issues online. This means we can record and map every issue efficiently and effectively and continue to press ahead with our pledge to provide stronger roads for the people of Hampshire. Councillor Nick Adams-King, Lead Cabinet Member for Universal Services, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Hillary, please.
This has come from Councillor Rob Humby, the leader of Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester. Devolution. I very much welcomed the clear steer and statement of intent from government last week, which confirmed that in order to continue any negotiations towards devolution for our region, this must be based on a pan-Hampshire footprint and participation by all four local authorities of Hampshire County Council, Isle of Wight Council, Portsmouth City Council and Southampton City Council is crucial. At the County Council, we want to achieve the most ambitious deal possible for 2 million residents, which is the combined population of the whole of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Pan-Hampshire is a genuine southern powerhouse, combining towns, cities, people and businesses that are part of a nationally important economic area. The prospect of a Pan-Hampshire County deal is a golden opportunity to secure an additional £1.14 billion worth of investment for our region, which would provide a hugely significant contribution to Hampshire's economic prosperity, stimulating economic recovery, regeneration and business growth, from which all our residents can benefit. As a result, the Pan-Hampshire area would become better and stronger, bringing far-reaching benefits to all those who live, work and visit the region. And with more decision-making powers devolved by government to the people and places across our region, we would all have much more say in important decisions for keeping the region prosperous and thriving for decades to come. This truly is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for us all. Anyone who'd like to find out more can view the Pan-Hampshire County Deal prospectus online at democracy.hants.gov.uk/s100275/Pan-Hampshire%20deal%20prospectus%2022.pdf. We look forward to the next stages of discussion and are urging our partners to actively support and engage with the Pan-Hampshire approach for the benefits of all residents. Councillor Rob Humby, leader of the Hampshire County Council, The Castle in Winchester.
Thank you, Hilary. I think we're all very entertained by your reading of the website addresses, and I think we'll give them all to you in future readings. And then we go on to the last letter from Heather, please.
This letter, entitled Green Not Brown, is from Charles Jennings. Your report on Bushfield referred to the area for planned development as previously built up land. This term was repeated in a second article on the same page of the Chronicle, June 22nd. The Bushfield area was requisitioned by the War Office during World War II from the landowner for use in the war effort. Under the Defence of the Realm, acquisition of land, and other later legislation, including the Requisitioned Land and War Works Act 1945, the War Office, which became the Ministry of Defence in 1967, set compensation for requisitioned land, as well as the de-requisitioning and settlement processes. Where agricultural land was requisitioned, it was normally expected that it would be returned to its previous use. In the case of Bushfield, that meant the area should have been returned to farming use and not left to degrade, untouched, for almost 70 years. I suspect a search in the National Archive at Kew would show that the landowners even received payment in the compensation agreement to do the work required to return it to its original use. So it is incorrect to refer to the land proposed for development as Bushfield as previously built up land. It is a greenfield site. This should be taken into account when the proposal is reviewed by the council. Charles Jennings, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. That concludes our letters. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the letter, the editor at 5 Brook Street, Upper Brook Street, that is Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you can even drop in when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. So we go on now to editorial comment, which is going to be read by Hilary, please.
Let's rejoice and celebrate community. There's so much happening in our wonderful city right now. The pages of this week's Hampshire Chronicle are jam-packed with pictures and write-ups of just some of the marvellous events that have either taken place in the past couple of weeks or will be taking place in the coming weeks. Whether it's the St Cross Fete or the Bishop's Waltham Family Fun Day or even the Alsford Duck Race, all the community events have drawn large crowds eager to make the most of the fine summer weather. And there's more coming. The Hat Fair, Swanmore Fete, and the ever-popular Wickham Festival, all on the horizon. After a rather turbulent few years where COVID scuppered so many events, it's great to see the community getting back together. Let's hope this fine weather lasts a few more weeks, or at least weekends, as many other villages and places in and around Winchester also look to celebrate our smashing community. Editor's note. It's been a struggle to pick the best pictures and stories to print, but there are many more on our website, which is hampshirechronicle.co.uk.
Thank you, Hilary. It was a nice short.
Yes, no percentages in that one.
Right, we now move on to the opinion piece, which is written this week by George Hayter, and it's headed, Indicating is Good for You. Drivers who change lane without signalling appear to me either lazy, foolish, or both. Lazy because indicating doesn't take much effort, foolish because it can prevent a crash, and I would add a third adjective, rude, because it upsets people. Isn't it obvious to Britain's lazy minority of foolish and rude drivers that signalling is vital when performing what can be, at speed, a deadly move? I love signalling. To me, it's as natural as saying good morning. In fact, it's sort of the same thing. Whether I'm going somewhere for work or pleasure, signalling helps me have a good start to the day. Lifting a finger to activate the orange flashing lights on the corners of my car, it also says, excuse me, as I invade a bit of somebody else's road space. What life-loving, sane human wouldn't use benign direction signal indicators to inform drivers behind, in front, and to both sides of an imminent move, alerting them and giving them time to adjust their position? Indicating also keeps drivers safe on the M3 and other busy dual carriageways by creating a helpful atmosphere on the road. At least, that's what I think. Signalling before you make a move generates a sense of cooperation between drivers. The atmosphere at 70 miles an hour becomes less race and more helping one another along, and that can take the stress out of the journey to work. It's not just indicating. I try to contribute to the sense of cooperation in congested traffic by restraining my Max Verstappen instincts. Think of Junction 11 on the M3 northbound, where traffic from Winchester South and the Compton area joins the motorway as it climbs to the Twyford Down cutting. There the flow tends to slow to three lanes, queuing, so joining traffic finds it hard to slip in. Few drivers already on the motorway prepare a gap for the joiners. At that stressful junction, I personally don't catch up with the car in front and drive 6 inches behind it. Instead, I leave a gap so that one car can squeeze in. Or two or three, if they're quick. Or even half a dozen, if I don't have to slow down. This makes me sound like a saint, but I'm not. My motivation is selfish. I know that letting a few vehicles in is only going to delay me by 10 or 15 seconds. And it's nice to help people. Sometimes a driver will raise a hand in gratitude. You get a nice feeling. It's the pleasure all humans get when they make a friend and not an enemy. That pleasure is the stuff of life. It helps me enjoy my driving and helps me to be in a good mood for the rest of the day. Oh, don't worry. I never overindulge in politeness. I do not give way to many drivers from the side so that I significantly delay drivers behind. Driving style gives motorists a voice when they're in traffic, and using indicators provides a softer vocabulary. Cutting in front of someone without signalling says, "Get out of my way, I'm in a hurry. I don't care about your safety." On the other hand, signalling and waiting for the gap says, "Good morning. I'll be awfully grateful if you could make room for me. Thanks in advance." Saying which of those utterances is most likely to prepare a commuter for a relaxed day at work. Obeying the highway code comes naturally when you drive kindly and communicate through signalling. Take Rule 147, for instance. Try to be understanding if other road users cause problems. They may be inexperienced or not know the area well. Self-driving vehicles controlled by computers are likely to consign accelerator pedals to the history books within a few decades, so perhaps we should enjoy driving while we can. Don't squander our remaining years of motoring independence by not being friendly behind the wheel. Well, we move on to the next piece, please. And there is no letter from Westminster, so we move on to Belgarum. Now, Belgarum gives us an alternative look at the news. We've got two items for this week. Richard, could we have the first, please?
Yes. Hold on to your hat. Project to celebrate Caravan Company. A prestigious caravan manufacturer based in Winchester is being celebrated in a new project. Bertram Hutchings Caravans Limited, later known as Winchester Caravans, is being remembered by the Caravan and Motorhome Club collection hosted at the National Motor Museum. The collection is hosting a range of activities which will be held throughout July and August to remember the company. These include an exhibition and talk at Hampshire Record Office and family activity packs at selected club campsites across the county. Known as the Rolls-Royce of caravans, the Winchester Caravan Works was located at Stockbridge Road. Spanning across 5 decades and 2 world wars, the business is one of the few to successfully produce a range of horse-drawn, motor and traveller caravans. In 2015, a significant collection of photographs, ephemera and journals relating to the company was donated to the Caravan and Motorhome Club collection. The collection has since been digitised, catalogued and researched in detail by a team of volunteers at the National Motor Museum. Supported by a grant from the Hampshire Archives Trust, this project will be the first time that a significant collection of photographs, ephemera and journals relating to Winchester caravans are shared publicly alongside their stories. Senior curator of the Caravan and Motorhome Club collection, Angela Willis, said, "The arrival of Bertram Hutchings' collection at the museum was a real career highlight. It's unusual for the era that such a stunning visual record of a caravan business was created, but for it to have survived to this day is truly remarkable. I am delighted that Bertram Hutchings' story is returning to Winchester this summer and we can celebrate his legacy on leisure travel. Homes on Wheels, the story of Winchester caravans, can be viewed at the Hampshire Record Office on Sussex Street from July the 4th to August the 31st during Record Office opening hours. Angela Willis will also be delivering a talk on the history of the caravan holiday in Hampshire at the Record Office on Monday, August the 7th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Prior to the talk, visitors will be able to view the exhibition. To find out more and book tickets for the talk, visit the National Motor Museum website."
Thank you, Richard. Hillary, please.
I'm glad to say this has no web address on it. Lift off for Cathedral Chick. Winchester Cathedral's newest peregrine has been flying for the first time. Rosie, who hatched on April the 30th, was spotted flying around the cathedral earlier this month. The peregrine has grown at a rapid speed, from a small white ball of fluff to flying in just under 2 months. Rosie was given the name after the cathedral launched a competition, allowing people to vote. The name is inspired by the rose window, which its parent, Winnie, nests beneath. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, was surprised that Rosie was flying so soon. He said, "She was really quick to get flying, a few days earlier than expected. Being an only child has some benefits. Non-stop food and attention, nobody else using your launch pad, and exclusive access to Winnie and William for flying lessons. It can't get any better." Mr. Betton has been closely monitoring parents Winnie and William, as well as Rosie, over the last few months. Posting on the cathedral website, Mr. Betton said, "A few people have asked for an explanation of food caching. Winnie and William sometimes cache a portion or a whole kill if they find themselves with too much food at one time. Often a series of shriveled up wings and headless bodies are left abandoned in the gully and never used. It's a bit grim in the gully already."
Yes, delightful. Right, we now move on to a few articles of some historical interest. First one is headed "New Energy Initiative for Historical Homes." Winchester Civic Chiefs have released a new guide to help owners of historical buildings make their homes or businesses more energy efficient. Energy upgrades to buildings that are listed or in a conservation area can be subject to more complex planning restrictions than modern structures, partly because inappropriate alterations can trap moisture, leading to unhealthy living conditions and structural damage. The City Council guide provides an easy reference to the likely planning permissions needed for energy efficiency upgrades, helping owners to understand what measures they will be able to install. One property that's already made use of the Council Planning Department for historic buildings is 12 St Swithin Street, a Grade 2 listed building dating back to the mid-17th century. It is owned by local environmental campaigners Chris Holloway and Phil Gagg. The house also has a unique feature. Its rear wall was built into the remains of the Roman city walls, parts of which date to the 3rd century. Following support from the council, the building was granted consent for substantial insulation work to the ground floor, walls and roof. The type of insulation was carefully chosen to improve the thermal insulation, protect historic features whilst avoiding the build-up of damp. The works are in addition to solar panels, draft proofing and secondary glazing previously installed by the owners. Cabinet Member for Place and the Local Plan, Councillor Jackie Porter, said improving the energy performance of buildings across the district is a big part of the Council's ambitions to be greener, faster and to become a carbon neutral district by 2030. Our district's many fantastic historic buildings are no exception. I know many people will feel that it can be difficult to upgrade historic buildings, but for the right advice and expertise, it's possible to implement energy-efficient measures while still preserving the historic character of the building. I'm very pleased to see the publication of this guide. It helps explain and simplify what work is likely to be possible on the building itself or its location. It's a win-win situation, reducing energy bills and our impact on the environment. And the next piece from Heather, please.
This is a Balgarum item, Academics New Light on Victorian Women. A new book by two academics from the University of Winchester shows that Victorian and Edwardian women were more radical than people might expect. Employment rights, sex trafficking, race relations, education, and alcohol abuse were just some of the issues dealt with by the ladies of the Anglican Church Congress. The impact of the Congress is examined in Women and the Anglican Church Congress, 1861 to 1938, Space, Place and Agency, by Dr. Sue Anderson Faithful and Dr. Catherine Holloway. The pair launched their book at an event held at the University's St. Alfred building on Wednesday evening, June 14th. The women featured included Laura Ridding, daughter of the first Earl of Selborne and wife of George Ridding, the headmaster of Winchester College, who founded the National Union of Women Workers. Mary Sumner, a rector's wife from Alsford, who founded the Mother's Union, and Mary Townsend, a botanist's wife from Wickham, who founded the Girls Friendly Society. Dr. Anderson Faithful said, "Although a lot of their work prioritised chastity, we must challenge the assumption that these were prudish Victorian ladies. They wanted to safeguard women, particularly unmarried women, and they wanted the same moral standards to apply to men as to women. Because they were under the umbrella of the church, it made them more acceptable, and they were able to bring about change without being confrontational."
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Puddle now home to plant life. Winchester's longest lasting puddle has been garnering publicity on the Facebook page called Angry People in Local Newspapers about press stories from across the UK. It's such a permanent feature that it is now also attracting flora and fauna. Green algae is colonising the bottom of the puddle, which never entirely disappeared during the long dry spell. Pigeons are enjoying paddling in its shallow depths outside M&S on St George's Street. The bottom line with our puddle watch stories is that it's only a permanent feature because the nearby drain was laid at a higher level than the road surface. That shoddy work that we all paid for.
Richard, such an exciting story. So just a few items which may be of interest in the coming week. Monday the 3rd of July at the Theatre Royal Winchester, The Mikado. This is Sasha Pagan's joyous all-male production of the Gilbert and Sullivan's opera. Tuesday the 4th, Hampshire and Beyond. That's Winchester Community Choir Summer Concert, and that is at the United Church, Jury Street. Saturday the 8th of July, The Tempest, Shakespeare's The Tempest, that is, that's an outdoor show. That is at the Whitchurch Silk Mill. And if you miss that on the 8th, it is on again on the 14th, but this time at Basing House. Music for a Summer Evening, Southern Voices. This is at St. Peter's Church, Stockbridge, and it's a concert by Southern Voices. Tuesday the 11th of July, The Faith and Joy of Gerontius, Vox Humana Gregorian, with Sarah Bullen and Neil Nisbet. Goodness me, that's a mouthful. It's a new sacred melodrama based on John Henry Newman's poem The Dream of Gerontius, and that's at Romsey Abbey. Wednesday the 12th, Blue Apple Animal Farm. This is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Blue Apple looks at George Orwell's Animal Farm through their own particular lens to tell this thought-provoking story. Well, finally, before we go on to the general items of news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 4:50 a.m. and set again around 9:30 p.m. And now we go on to items of general news. Heather, first piece, please.
This item is entitled Memoir on Life with Down Syndrome. Ahead of the release of his debut book, a Winchester actor has already received the support of famous TV stars and novelists. Tommy Jessop from Winchester has written the first book by someone with Down Syndrome for an adult audience. His memoir, titled A Life Worth Living, available from Thursday, July 6, explores the life and views of someone with Down syndrome. The actor, activist and public speaker, who starred in hit series such as Line of Duty and as Hamlet for the Blue Apple Theatre, was commissioned to write the book for the Headline Publishing Group. Tommy, 38, said, "I feel excited, proud and honoured, and I really am looking forward to getting my memoir out into the world. I'm a man on a mission to show that life with Down syndrome can be exciting and is worth living, so that other people understand and give us chances in health, education and work to live life to the full and to be fulfilled. I want to help people understand us better and show that we are all different with different gifts, talents and personalities. Hopefully, readers will enjoy all the stories. I will take them onto film sets and behind scenes as an actor, into my campaigns, parliament and public speaking, tease them about sport and interesting facts, and share some emotional moments." The actor's mum, Jane Jessop, founded Blue Apple Theatre in Winchester to provide a theatre company for people with learning disabilities. Reviewed as simply wonderful by Stephen Fry, A Life Worth Living will also have an accessible, easy-read version. Novelist Mark Haddon, who wrote The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, said in his review, "Tommy Jessop makes the world a better place. Everyone needs to hear his voice." Stephen Fry, in his review, said, "The most instantly lovable and engaging personality to emerge from the pages of a book that I have encountered in decades." The actor's mum, Jane Jessop, founded Blue Apple in Winchester to provide a theatre company for people with learning disabilities.
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Family dismay at plan to sell Girl Guide site. Three generations of a family in Kingsworthy have joined the campaign to save one of Girl Guiding's most treasured sites. Queen's Guide Sally Haig, 80, daughter-in-law Isabel and 15-year-old granddaughter Amelie are dismayed at the news that the new Forest Girl Guiding activity site Fox Lease will be put up for sale by Girl Guiding trustees next year. Built in Tudor times, Fox Lease near Lyndhurst was gifted to the Girl Guide movement in 1922 by Princess Mary, with the main house being named after her. Over the last 100 years, thousands of girls have benefited from the centre, visiting for international camps, weekend residentials, day trips and celebrations. Other organisations that use the venue include school camps, scouts and Duke of Edinburgh expeditions. Kingsworthy Guides leader Isabel Haig said, When we received this unexpected news from headquarters, we were all utterly bereft. I've been a leader in Hampshire West for more than 20 years and visited Foxleys on multiple occasions. Foxleys is a place where units come together and realise girl guiding is an international movement. It's a place where girls explore freely and safely in the countryside. It's a place where long-lasting friendships are made and girls get the chance to just be girls. It's a place of challenge and adventure. It's a place where I can be myself with my amazing guiding colleagues, sharing our passion for the outdoors and adventure with the next generation. It's a place I've introduced my daughter and seen her grow in confidence and shared her joy. Isabel's mother-in-law, Sally, remembers camps at Foxleys from when she was a girl 65 years ago and worries that taking it away will poorly impact young people's mental health. She said, "I can't imagine not having Foxleys. We need more sites like this, not less of them." Amelie's most treasured memory of Foxleys is wellies and wristbands, a festival-style camp attracting 3,000 girls and leaders for a weekend of dancing, bands and activities. Amelie said, "Growing up I was told that everyone in guiding owned a small part of Foxleys, that it was ours to enjoy and explore. I want to be a Queen's guide like my granny, and part of that is volunteering at large-scale events. I'm so sad that this opportunity will be taken away from me." A Facebook group named Safe Our Girl Guide Activity Centres has gained thousands of members protesting the sale of Foxleys and four other girl guiding training and activity centres that are planned to be closed. Nearly 30,000 people have signed an online petition, and the Hague family is urging more people to do the same so as to push the trustees to reconsider their decision.
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
This is entitled Large Scale Street Fight. Police are appealing for witnesses after a fight broke out in Winchester city centre. The fight occurred outside the Giggling Squid restaurant in the square at approximately 9 p.m. on Friday, June the 16th. A police spokesperson said, "Officers were called to reports of a large group fighting outside the Giggling Squid, the square. Before officers arrived on scene, the group split into two and dispersed, with one group travelling toward High Street and the other towards the cathedral. We have conducted a number of inquiries and are now asking the public for any information that could assist our inquiries."
Thank you, Hilary. My piece is headed "True to Tradition as Fate Crowds Brave the Heat." Soaring temperatures didn't stop the crowds from flocking to one of Hampshire's oldest fates. Beginning in 1868, St Cross Fete is still going strong, attracting thousands on the sunny afternoon on Saturday, June the 24th. Train rides, games, music, dancing, food and an old-fashioned Punch and Judy show filled the grounds of the Hospital of St Cross. Community is the heart of the traditional event, with all stallholders being parishioners and no external vendors. Murray Dixon, who's been helping organise the event for more than a decade, said, "It's been really busy. We thought people might not come because it was so hot, but they've come out in their thousands, and we've all thoroughly enjoyed themselves." There's at least a couple of hundred people who are involved in every fete, whether that's putting up tents, running stalls, or making cakes and teas. We're always grateful to the trustees of the Hospital of St Cross, who allow us to use their fantastic grounds. Trish Spires, who runs the Cakes, Bakes and Makes section of the 100 Men's Hall, says, "It's gone very well. It's so well attended. People keep coming and braving the heat. It's still an old-fashioned country fair that hasn't been commercialised, which keeps the community spirit alive. It's built up such a reputation that people travel from as far away as London each year." Regular St Cross Fete goers Callum and Barbara MacArthur brought along their friends Nick and Jane Young, who travelled from Ludlow in Shropshire. Callum from St Cross said, "Oh, it's a lovely setting. We come back year after year for delicious cakes and the brass music. There's a sense of timelessness and continuity." Barbara said, "There's a wonderful atmosphere, and it's so beautiful here, which is what makes it so special. The fete never seems to age. Nick added, it's a quintessentially English fair. It's absolutely magical here, with fun for all the family. Holly McNinnell, 32, from St Cross, was there with her husband and soon-to-be two-year-old son. She said, we've been a couple of years on the trot. The community and traditional element take you back to another time, and there are lots of locals here. The little one is definitely intrigued by the music and dancing. The sunny weather has only added to the day. This year, money was raised for the Winchester Women's Refuge and the Wildfire Youth Project, a new charity supporting youth workers in schools and churches. Heather, please.
This item is suspect sought over string of thefts. Police want to speak to a man following a series of thefts in villages around Winchester. A CCTV image has been released in connection to seven separate incidents in the early hours of June the 7th. Multiple vehicles were broken into, and two bicycles were also stolen from an outbuilding. Officers are investigating the following reports and believe they're linked. The theft of a pair of sunglasses from a vehicle and a set of golf clubs from outside an address on Southgate Gardens, Winchester, at around 4:30 a.m. A vehicle interference on Field Way, Compton, at around 2 a.m. The vehicle was searched, but nothing was stolen. The theft of a pair of binoculars from a vehicle on Cleese Way, Compton Down. It was also reported that a man was seen trying another car door handle on this road. The theft of a pair of sunglasses from a vehicle on Main Road, Otterbourne. The theft of loose change and loyalty cards from a vehicle on Fairfield Road, Shawford, between 4 a.m. and 8 a.m. The theft of two bikes from an address on Fairfield Road, Shawford, at around 4:55 a.m. A suspicious incident on Cliff Way, Compton, whereby two men were seen trying car door handles. Officers have conducted a number of inquiries and are now asking the public for help in identifying this man. If you know him or have any other information that may help the investigation, call 101 with reference 44230224788.
Thank you, Heather. Now, Richard, please.
Post Office restores normal hours. Winchester Post Office continues to face staffing issues and reduced hours. But managers say new staff have been hired and normal hours should be resumed from June the 26th. As previously reported, the Post Office in WH Smith on the High Street is now the sole post office in the city centre after the closure of the Upper High Street Post Office in 2021. There's been ongoing criticism at the long waits at the post office, with customers often having to wait over half an hour. Following criticism of its revised opening hours, brought in earlier this year, the post office is still operating under reduced hours from Monday to Friday. Low staffing numbers alongside high demand have caused customers to experience delays, with queues frequently stretching out of the post office and into WH Smith. Services such as passports and driving licences have been affected as a result, causing problems for customers. A post office spokesperson told the Chronicle continued staffing issues are to blame. However, we are pleased to announce that two counter clerks have recently been appointed to support the branch. We therefore anticipate that the branch will return to normal trading hours from Monday the 26th of June.
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
This item is entitled Mill Thrills as Readers Choose Favourite Pub. The winner of the annual Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser Pub of the Year competition has been revealed. The Mill Arms in Dunbridge received the most votes from Chronicle and Advertiser readers to take the top spot, beating out nine other pubs on the shortlist. Owner Gina MacDonald was thrilled to hear the news, with more and more customers visiting the venue in Barley Hill each month. Gina, 59, previously owned the Hunter's Inn in Romsey, but left last year to focus on the rural pub in Dunbridge, which she brought back to life in 2017 after it had been closed. The publican said, "It's fantastic. We've had so many customers come in and vote for us. I'm very pleased that we've got recognition from them all for all our hard work." We have gone through tough times. The pub was shut before we took it on, so we took 2 years building it up again before COVID hit. But for the past 6 to 9 months, trade has really turned and we keep getting busier. We managed to hold our own and survive, and now we're thriving. We've got a very stable group of staff, many of which have been with me since we first opened. I've got some who started as teens and now come back in the holidays in between university. There's a real family team feel to this place. I lead from the front and would never ask any of them to do something I wouldn't. We've got our regulars, but it's also about making anyone who walks through the door feel like they're in a friendly environment. The customers are so important, and we're thrilled that people see what we're trying to do here. Hopefully this will give us some more publicity. We've got Dunbridge train station opposite us and Mottisfont National Trust Gardens up the road, but we're still quite remote and off the beaten track. Our chef, Sean Green, has been a big draw. Trade has built up post-COVID with people knowing he is here, and it's about continuing to let people know. Alongside Chef Sean is Gina's sister and pub manager, Lorna Burton, with 15 members of staff in total. The Mill Arms in Barley Hill also has 6 letting rooms and a function room. For more information, go to millarmsdunbridge.co.uk. The 9 other pubs on the shortlist were the Duke on the Test in Romsey, Hampshire Bowman in Dunbridge, the Dolphin in Hursley, the Golden Lion in Winchester, the Hunter's Inn Romsey, the Plough in Itchenabbas, the Tichborne Arms in Alresford, the White Horse Hotel in Romsey, and the Willow Tree Winchester.
Thank you, Hilary. My piece is not about a pub, it's about a wine bar. And it is headed Pioneering Wine Bar, Latest Costs Casualty. A Winchester wine bar, the first to operate self-service, will close next month, its owner told the Chronicle. David Nicholson said that Black Bottle on Bridge Street would shut on Sunday, July the 16th. It comes as Mr. Nicholson said he had not ruled out reopening the Black Rat, the Michelin star winning restaurant, which closed last year because of the cost of living crisis. The Black Bottle opened around 10 years ago and pioneered the local use of self-serve wine in the city. A planning application is currently being considered to convert the bar into a pizza restaurant, to be called Polizia. Mr. Nicholson also owns the Black Boy Pub and the Black Hole Bed and Breakfast on Wharf Hill and the Black Rat Restaurant on Chesil Street. He said, "I think that the concept at the Black Bottle was really very good. The problem with the increase in all of the costs, it's just unviable. It was never a huge money maker, but it was quite an interesting, fun business that was good for Winchester. Sadly, it's got too expensive. There is a cost of living crisis, and the luxury glass of wine is being hit. Self-serve did not really reduce staffing costs," he said. "You still need staff to manage the customers. If they wanted a gin and tonic or a pint of beer, it didn't reduce staffing, but it gave the customers more range of wine because it didn't go off. It's sad and a shame that these things happen, but one shouldn't get too upset about it." Regarding the Black Rat reopening, Mr. Nicholson said, "There's always a chance. I want to see what is happening. The market is up in the air with food and other costs going up. To run it as the Black Rat will be very expensive. The cost of staff, the chefs, waiting staff, gas and electricity makes it currently unviable. But in a year that might have changed. I haven't discounted it reopening. I just want to see what happens in the market. To reopen it will cost about £100,000, and I don't have that money at the moment." Mr. Nicholson took over the Black Boy in the mid-1990s and turned it into the city's most popular pubs before expanding the Black Empire. Heather, please.
This is an item on a bug hotel. A bug hotel and all its inhabitants were pulled apart and set on fire by vandals. The insect home in Elizabeth Way, made by Bishop's Wharf and Men's Shed for Priory Park, was wrecked during the night of Thursday, June 22nd. Bishop's Waltham Parish Council posted on Facebook with a photo, "Very sad news. This caterpillar and all the other insects that lived in the Priory Meadow Bug Hotel were victims of mindless vandalism last night. The men's shed habitat for valued creatures was pulled apart and the contents burned. It's so disappointing that some individuals could destroy something the community created to protect wildlife."
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
And another unpleasant incident, I'm afraid. Two hurt in road rage incident. Two people were taken to hospital after they were assaulted in a Winchester street. The road rage incident occurred at approximately 10:10 p.m. on Wednesday, June the 21st, in Western Road, Fullflood, near the junction with Stockbridge Road. One of the victims, a man in his 60s, had been unloading a vehicle on the side of the road, when a man driving a Toyota Aygo began beeping his horn at the victim. He then got out of the car and punched him several times, causing a serious injury to his face. The victim's wife, a woman in her 60s, came over to help and was then assaulted by the same man, causing a serious injury to her face. Both victims were taken to hospital for treatment. Police are currently appealing for information about the incident. A police spokesperson said, "A 23-year-old man from Winchester has been arrested on suspicion of assault occasioning grievous bodily harm and assault occasioning actual bodily harm. He's been released on police bail. We've conducted a number of inquiries and are now asking the public for any information that could assist our investigation. Anyone with information is asked to call the police on 101 or submit information online via the Hampshire Constabulary website."
Thank you, Richard. Hilary, please.
This item's entitled "Building Firms Find." A pensioner lost both her legs after an easily avoidable accident on a housing site. The woman, 94, was walking along Mortimer's Lane with her friend when she was struck by a lorry in April 2021. Building materials were being delivered to the Pembers Hill Park development, managed by Drew Smith Holmes, Southampton Magistrates Court heard. The delivery driver was met by a traffic marshal from Barham Limited, a subcontractor for Drew Smith, now known as Countryside Partnership Southern. Prosecuting James Towie told the court how there was a failure to see the risks. He said, "It's quite clear this has had a profound effect upon Barham. It's a lesson that has been learnt. This is a most unfortunate incident. There was a deficiency and an oversight, and it's so sad." Sandeesh Singh, on behalf of Countryside Partnership Southern, said the company has expressed genuine remorse. He said the company regrets most sincerely the offence. District Judge Peter Greenfield described the incident as a life-changing event for the victim. Barham Limited was ordered to pay a £80,000 fine, a £190 victim surcharge, and £2,829.35 in costs. Countryside Partnership Southern was handed a £53,000 fine and ordered to pay a £190 victim surcharge and £2,829.35 in costs. Both companies admitted contravening a health and safety regulation by failing to plan, manage and monitor construction work.
Thank you, Hilary. My piece is headed "Gypsy Festival Brings Crowds." Hundreds of Romani gypsies have arrived in a Hampshire village as they celebrate a Christian festival. The group set up on a field in Curdridge on Sunday, with extra people arriving on Monday, June the 26th. It has been organised by the Light and Life Missionary Church, a Romani-led evangelical Pentecostal Christian movement. The festival is expected to last all week, with two religious services held each day in the encampment, and most of the attendees are expected to leave on Friday. It's an annual event that takes place in different locations each year. Their arrival has caused a stir in the community, with many posting on local community social media groups. Residents have reported seeing scores of caravans and trailers, a blue and white marquee and portaloos being installed. They've also reported hearing music. It is understood farmer Bob Woodley has given permission for the festival to be held on his land. A letter has been sent to local residents from Winchester City Council and Curdry's Parish Council saying that they had been unaware of the activity until it appeared on social media. They held an informal meeting on Monday evening. The letter said, Winchester City Council's legal team have been engaging with city councillors and confirmed that an events licence should have been applied for, as well as other associated health and safety highways permissions being needed. These applications have not been made, and therefore Winchester City Council are following a formal process with the landowner on this matter. Council representatives had a cordial meeting with the event organiser and asked that he pass on to the gathered community a request that the village and its residents are treated with respect and privacy. We agreed in return that we would ask residents to show the same behaviour towards this temporary gathering and the landowner. The letter said they would closely monitor the event and work on behalf of residents to minimise, where possible, the impact this gathering is having on the village community. There have been other camps also pitching up on land nearby, and it is not known if the parties are connected. A group of caravans has set up in nearby Shedfield, on the common and at the recreation ground. Heather, please.
It's trucks away for old aircraft Airbnb. A Winchester businessman has got permission to open an Airbnb in part of a disused 737. As previously reported, Colden Common man Stephen Northam bought the front half of the plane on eBay from Chichester College, where it was used to train aircrew. Mr. Northam then completed a refit, adding sleeping space for up to four people, a kitchenette, an on-board shower, with a refit being featured on the Channel 4 home improvement show, George Clark's Amazing Spaces. He subsequently submitted a planning application to Winchester City Council to change the land at Hanger Nurseries, Thompson's Lane near Oslebury, from agricultural to tourism, with the change being granted on Tuesday, June the 20th. Mr. Northam said, "It's all gone through, which is great. I'll be able to sleep again at night." Mm. It was a concern that if I didn't get planning granted, what would I do with half a 737 plane if it wasn't allowed to be there? But it's granted, and now I'm excited to crack on with finishing it up, getting it all ready and hopefully opening it up as an Airbnb in a few months. The part-time university lecturer told the Chronicle that the application was approved with only a few minor changes in conditions required, with a waste treatment plant for sewage needing to be added, as well as planting trees to make the site less visible from the public highway. Mr. Northam said he hopes to have all the required changes made soon, and that he expects the Airbnb to receive guests at the end of the summer with a waiting list of almost 300 customers. He continued, "The council were really supportive of this innovative, different, quirky idea, which I wasn't expecting. But everyone was quite supportive and helpful, and I'm glad it's gone through. I'm going to wait and see what happens with the plane before I start anything else. Always at the back of my mind, there's probably some more quirky ideas out there, but it's just wait and see what happens with this one first, and then go from there."
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Public are to have a say on spending. Hampshire residents are being asked for their views on ways the County Council can prepare its upcoming budget to balance rising costs. Hampshire County Council is asking people for their views on ways to help the authority draw up its budget over the next 2 years, through to April 2025. Councillor Rob Humby, leader, said the council also has to set money aside to help bridge funding shortfalls. But despite these measures and increasing council tax to the maximum they're allowed to this year, it still won't be enough in the years to come. There's expected to be a £132 million gap in their budget by 2025-26. This means some really difficult decisions will need to be made, which will impact some of the services the council can continue to deliver. We're now consulting on ideas on how we can balance the books and would like to hear people's views on how we can contribute to make the most of the public's money. The consultation runs from midday on Monday, June the 12th, to midnight on July the 23rd. The views submitted through this consultation will be collated and used to shape savings proposals that will be considered in the autumn. To take part in the consultation, go to hants.gov.uk/budget consultation, all one word.
Curator Hillary, please.
2-year wait to get school place. A father has said it is unacceptable that he has had to search for 2 years for a school place for his daughter. Derek Kent has been searching for somewhere to send his 12-year-old daughter, Rowena, after she left school in Southampton 2 years ago due to not feeling safe. She was homeschooled while Derek searched for a new place for her without success. Rowena has this week found a place at Swanmore College after the family moved to Curdridge. Derek said, "It is a big relief. She needs to spend time with her own age at school. It is a really good outcome." However, he still believes that the family had to search for 2 years to find a place is unacceptable. Derek said, "Because of non-attendance for more than 2 years, I think someone should be looking at our situation with a bit more of a priority, really. We're living in a village with 3 or 4 schools within a stone's throw almost, within an easy commute, but there's no spaces in those schools. So we're living in a country where, if your daughter's the wrong age or you're not very good at navigating an IT system, then you can fall through the net. And that seems to be what's happened." Swanmore College told the Chronicle, "Our waiting lists are managed by Hampshire County Council and ourselves, and we are obliged to follow strict criteria and procedures to ensure fairness for all applicants. Our intake each year is 270 pupils, and for September 2023, we have offered to 270 pupils and currently have a waiting list of 51 children. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, "We are pleased to advise that a school place has now been confirmed for the child concerned, following a short wait. We would add that, in situations where school place applications are made during the academic year, not all schools will immediately have vacancies. In a situation where schools are full, the council ensures children are added to waiting lists, as well as offering to parents a right of appeal and information about other schools in the locality. This process is consistently managed according to published advice."
Thank you, Hilary. My piece is headed "Mums Take on Three Peaks Challenge." Three Winchester women took on a mountainous challenge to raise money for their kids' primary school. Helen Fisher, Marie Claire O'Kane and Izzy Felstead began the National Three Peaks Challenge on one of the hottest days of the year, fundraising for a new climbing wall at All Saints Church of England Primary School in Highcliffe. Starting in Scotland at Ben Nevis, which at 1,344 metres is the tallest of the three peaks, Marie Claire had to withdraw from the challenge during the first mountain, but she remained with the team as they moved south from Ben Nevis, driving to the Lake District, where, due to stormy weather conditions, they diverted to climb Wernside in Yorkshire. Finally, the trio travelled to Snowdon in Wales, which is 1,085 metres tall, finishing the three peaks within 24 hours and raising £2,130 for All Saints School. To get behind the mountain mums, All Saints PTA encouraged the children to tackle the three peaks of Winchester, St Catherine's Hill, Orams Arbour and St Giles Hill over the May half term. Now Heather, please.
Much travelled resident celebrates the 101st birthday. A resident at a Winchester care home recently celebrated her 101st birthday. Amy Lanham, who lives at Brendon Care Park Road, celebrated the milestone on Tuesday, May the 30th with her son Tony, his wife Marion, daughter Jean, her husband Jeff and their daughter Gemma. Born in Cheshire, Amy had 8 brothers and sisters. When she left school, Amy took a job as a seamstress in a shirt factory. In 1941, she married her husband Mervyn, and they moved to Essex, Suffolk, and Norfolk, during which time they had Jean in 1942, and later returned to Amy's parents in Warrington, where Tony was born in 1944. In about 1946, they moved to Chandos Ford, and after a spell abroad, moved to Romsey. After Mervyn died in 1994, Amy moved back to Poole for a time and then to Lions Hall in Winchester when she was 90 and looked after herself there until she was 100. She came to Brendon Care Park Road after a spell of illness.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Man taken from bridge. Police were called to a man sitting on a railway bridge following reports of concern for his welfare. Officers were alerted at 7:20 p.m. on Sunday, June the 25th, to the man sitting over the railway line in Winchester by Clifton Terrace. The man came off the bridge shortly after the police arrived and was then taken to hospital. Winchester police closed Romsey Road between Clifton Terrace and Upper High Street, urging the public to avoid the area on Twitter at 7:30 p.m. Minutes later, Winchester police tweeted to say the road had reopened. The post read, "The earlier road closure of Romsey Road has now been lifted. Thank you for your patience."
Thank you, Richard. Hillary.
75-year-old 29th Trans France Cycle. A Winchester woman has returned home after cycling across France to fundraise for Christian Aid for the 29th year in a row. As previously reported, Jane Huff, 75, cycled solo across France from Bordeaux to Sète. The journey took approximately 2 weeks, with Miss Huff of Ruffield Close Week starting on May the 25th and arriving home on June the 12th. Miss Huff said, "There were many interesting places on the way. Carcassonne is magnificent and many smaller towns and villages full of history. The Canal du Midi is an amazing feat of engineering, dating from the 17th and early 18th centuries. Meanwhile, at Béziers, I stayed in the old prison, repurposed as l'Hôtel de la Prison. That amused the grandchildren. This is the 29th year in a row that Miss Huff has raised money for Christian Aid." She said, "I raise money for Christian Aid because they can make really good use of it, as they can rely on many faith-based and other voluntary helpers and can respond swiftly to emergencies, as well as providing ongoing development help worldwide. My husband, who died 6 years ago, worked in over 50 developing countries, advising on progressing the education systems. He went with a team of experts when a grant was to go from DFID, or the European Commission. He made me aware of the appalling poverty and living conditions in so many countries. I feel motivated to help them as best as I can. At time of writing, Miss Huff has managed to raise £1,713 for the charity. To donate, visit justgiving.com/page/Jane-Huff-2023.
Yet another long address. You obviously become an expert on them. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you do have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label back in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And I've been prompted by my colleagues around the table to say about what's on is that two of us are engaged in the next Chesil Theatre production of an open-air production of Treasure Island, which is being performed in the grounds of Winchester College this year. It runs from the 12th to the 15th of July, and you can come beforehand to enjoy a picnic if you like, and then sit and watch a rumbustious production of Treasure Island. So we hope to see some of you there. Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course, many thanks to my readers, Heather,
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Hillary.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye.